The show you have selected will start directly after the next message.
Welcome to the future you. Frank Lloyd Wright once said, "Study nature, love nature, stay close to nature, and it will never fail you." At Zija, we love nature. We study nature. In India, we discovered Moringa and created Moringa Supermix, a revolutionary new combination of organic ingredients, including natural vitamins, minerals, proteins, antioxidants, and omega oils. Zija's new Moringa Supermix will help you make a change for the better. Simply click on the Zija banner on the UKHealthRadio.com homepage. Power people need power vitality.
Hello, this is the Yes to Life show, and I'm your host, Robin Daly. Founder of the UK charity Yes to Life, has been helping people with cancer to understand and access integrative medicine for the last 13 years. Last week I said I hoped to host a show spotlighting some very interesting study results. This week, frustratingly, it's been postponed a little, but watch this space, I hope to be able to tell you more soon. So this week I'm going to be talking to Roger Oakes about a compound that he's very familiar with and that has been around for some time. It has a very interesting story and it's one that may yet have another chapter. I'm talking to Roger over the phone in Leicestershire. Good afternoon, Roger. Thanks very much for coming on to tell us all about CV247.
That is my pleasure.
I want to talk to you today about this compound. It's been used by cancer patients for many years and it's got an interesting pedigree, if you'll excuse the turn of phrase. Listeners who don't get that one will understand later, keep listening. But my first question is hopefully an easy one and one that actually I've never known the answer to. Why is it called CV247? What does it refer to?
Well, I believe it is in reference to John Carter's mother.
Mother.
Or not. He actually lived at number 247 on with a particular road they lived in North London. So it actually has no bearing whatsoever to the content.
It's a random name. Right, okay.
Well, it really is a random name, yes.
At least I know. So it's at this point, it's got quite a long history. Can you just tell us about its origins? How did this whole thing start?
Well, I didn't know John Carter years ago. I only met him 13 to 15 years ago, I suppose. And by then, he'd already spent a considerable period of time developing this particular combination therapy, which was originally designed to treat dogs. John Carter was a vet. As you well know, he died a few years ago. And he was, dare I say, quite an unusual man, totally dedicated to what he believed was likely to be a successful and yet innocuous treatment for veterinary use. Mm-hmm. And basically, that's how it began. He was the one who formulated it, and he was the one who fiercely defended his formulation to the point whereby, originally, he wouldn't share it with anybody at all, but later on, of course, he had to rescind on that, especially when it came to having to do some of the studies which we undertook at a later stage.
Right, okay. Well, that's interesting. I mean, that has parallels with other people who hung on to their formulae, some of them, unfortunately, even to the grave. Interesting. So, at some point, this mixture, it started to be used by humans as well. How did that happen?
Well, I think it's because John recognised that there was a gap in the market for something. He didn't see it as being a commercial opportunity, more of a medicinal opportunity. And in fact, at the end of his time, he became more interested in the potential for human use than in animal use.
Mm, right.
But it really just came about because people began to ask him whether or not it was available for human use.
Right, and so he started, giving it away at that time?
He did, yes, he did give it away. He made it up himself,
yes.
And he just gave it away to people that he felt would benefit.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk about, you say, the ingredients now known. Well, what is it made of? Yeah. And is it still the same as it was when he originally conceived it?
The formulation is the same. The only difference being originally it was in a liquid formulation. It's now in a capsular formulation.
Oh.
But all the time I was working on it, it was a liquid formulation. The reason why they decided to change it to capsules was because obviously it's easier to transport and to dispense. Most pharmacists don't like glass bottles, which is how it was originally formulated. But the contents are identical.
Mm-hmm. And what are the ingredients?
Well, basically, it's a combination product of vitamin C, that is ascorbic acid,
mm-hmm.
manganese gluconate, copper gluconate, and sodium salicylate, all of which are very well known.
Okay, what prompted him to pick these particular things and put them together?
Well, he had a belief, and I think with fairly good, sound scientific justification, that cancer was a combination of a number of weaknesses. First of all, obviously, there was the potential for an immune deficiency, or if you like, an impaired immune function.
Yes.
There was clearly evidence for oxidative stress. And there was a need to have something which was able to inhibit some of those factors which promote tumours. And he came up with the idea that certainly with regard to copper and manganese, these are very well known trace elements, essential trace elements, which are included in enzymes such as superoxide dismutase. Very important to combat oxidative stress, which is as a result of the failure of an antioxidant system, which includes decreased superoxide dismutase levels. So copper and manganese, as I say, were essential elements in that, and he decided that what he wanted were salts which were suitable for inclusion in his formulation.
Mm-hmm.
With regard to presence of ascorbic acid, then there's certainly evidence to show that ascorbic acid will enhance the immune system, and the sodium salicylate is a well-known inhibitor of certain COX enzymes. And that would actually reduce, therefore, the presence of prostaglandins like PGE2, and in turn would try, at least in theory, to inhibit the production of certain growth factors, which are involved in the generation of what we call angiogenesis.
Mm. So, do you want to just explain angiogenesis for people who don't understand the word?
Well, angiogenesis is basically the promotion of microvasculature for which most rapidly growing tumours require, without which they won't grow rapidly.
Mm. So these are minute blood vessels in order to get their energy.
They are,
supply.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so this was a very carefully put together product in that case. He thought carefully about each strand of it.
He did. It wasn't just a random selection of potential ingredients. As I repeat from what I said right at the start, I didn't know John years ago, but I believe he thought very carefully about the composition.
Mm. And what element do you think it was in his background that led him down this path to actually look at these type of ingredients for a product?
I think he just read up about it.
Right,
that's my
just
understanding. He's a qualified vet. He'd been working in the veterinary field for a number of years. So it's not as if he came upon all these things from a totally naive viewpoint.
Right.
But I don't doubt that he did research and he came to the conclusion that these were the best components to include in his formulation.
Mm-hmm. So he was using it in his capacity as a vet initially, and it was presumably due to the successes he was having that he was prompted to offer it to some people in that it might help them.
Yes, ultimately, that was quite a long time after he had formulated it for veterinary use. I mean, basically, the difference was that he used to prescribe it on a volume per weight basis.
Mm-hmm.
As most human beings are somewhat large in animals, they just got a little bit more.
I see.
It was a little bit crude in the way that he did that, I have to say.
Right, okay. Well, things move on. Interesting. So it's still in regular use within veterinary circles, though, I believe.
It is, yes. A number of vets, both in the UK and I think in Central Europe, use it quite regularly.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly the indications are from open label studies which were undertaken that a number of dogs do undoubtedly benefit from it. Not all.
Not all.
And it's sometimes difficult to identify which ones will respond well.
Mm.
But a surprising number do, at least with regard to perceived quality of life. And obviously that perception can only be judged by an owner and by a veterinary surgeon.
Okay, well, just coming back to the four ingredients again. Obviously, these are four separate things that he's chosen for the particular action they have against cancer. Apart from the fact that obviously there is as a mindset, which he was clearly part of, which says that a good way to tackle cancer is from several different angles at once. Do you think there's any other synergy between the four products? Do you think the fact they're actually in together helps in any way?
Well, it's difficult to say whether or not there's any evidence to suggest that they act synergistically. I think they probably act independently of each other on individual aspects of the cancer process.
Hmm.
We've never actually, as far as I'm aware, investigated the synergistic effect. What we do know is that the combination product does seem to work better than the individual components. So
right.
In that regard, you could say that it acts synergistically.
Yes.
But that's because I think it is approaching different aspects, as I say, of the tumour promotion process. If you like, neoplastic initiation, I suppose, is the other word you could use.
All right. Okay, so... would you say that this product is essentially non-toxic? Does it have any acknowledged side effects?
Well, the one and only component which really has the potential to have a side effect is the salicylate component. I mean, it's well known that salicylates are gastric irritants, and a number of patients have complained of gastric irritation. None to the point whereby it was a serious adverse event, but nonetheless it was noted on a number of occasions. I should point out that in animal studies there were no known side effects, but that of course is because animals don't complain as much.
Right. Yeah, fair enough. You mentioned about the fact that it worked for some animals and not for others. And we're particularly talking about dogs here, is that true? Has it been used with other animals?
Yeah, we are. No, it would be inappropriate to use in cats. Most cats are quite allergic to salicylate, so
okay.
I would not advocate its use there.
Yeah, okay. So, but as you say, it doesn't work across the board. So I think the same thing would be true of how it helps people as well. Is that correct? That actually it seems to help some people and not others?
That is absolutely true. We have tried to examine which types of cancer are likely to respond better. And certainly the evidence based primarily on in vitro studies
mm-hmm.
is that, yes, certain types of cancer do respond better. For example, prostate cancer doesn't seem to be particularly receptive, and you may recall that prostate cancer was actually the only controlled clinical trial which was ever undertaken.
Mm.
And that was a little bit ambivalent with regard to whether or not CV247 was better than sodium salicylate alone.
Right, interesting. The thing that's happened in the intervening years since John Carter invented it is, of course, the process of testing particular treatments against an individual's cancer has emerged.
Mm-hmm.
Is this something that's been applied in this case, that people actually tested for whether CV247 will work for their cancer?
That's very interesting. I think that probably some individuals will report that, yes, it has worked remarkably well for them. Whether or not it has worked in isolation or whether it is simply because they started it and are reluctant to stop it, I wouldn't really like to say. It's very difficult to draw conclusions from anecdotal data.
Yes, I appreciate that. But if people are being tested, though, they could start to use CV247 for a good reason, if you like, because according to the lab, it's been shown to have an effect against their particular cancer. So it's more precise, if you like, than saying prostate cancer. This is actually an individual's cancer, so that its genetic makeup and everything. I was just wondering whether that was a territory in which it was being used, applied in that kind of way, and whether that is more successful.
From an individual viewpoint, I have to say I don't know which patients are currently benefiting from CV247. What I do know is that the more recent work tend to suggest that CV247 might be a benefit in the treatment of advanced lung cancer, and my understanding is that a study is planned in Hungary to look at just that indication.
Right.
But I have to be honest and say, I don't know how far that has progressed.
Okay.
But perhaps of more interest with regard to immediacy is the possibility of benefiting those patients who have been treated with cisplatin. It seems to, at least the in vitro work, and certainly work which is undertaken in rats, would tend to suggest that the level of nephrotoxicity is considerably reduced if you use CV247 with cisplatin. There's also a suggestion that actually the dose of cisplatin could be reduced and yet have the same benefit, which obviously is of distinct advantage. And another observation which came out of these studies was that possibly the actual longevity, if you like, the lifespan of the usefulness of cisplatin could be actually enhanced as well, so that the frequency of dosing could actually be reduced. Those particular observations, I think, are really quite exciting. And indeed, one of the parties that made these observations was of the opinion that they have not seen any other drug which has quite such a dramatic effect. So that, I think, is worthy of further investigation. It's my knowledge that it is being investigated, but again, I don't know how far.
Well, that is very interesting. I mean, that's proper integrative medicine there, and it seems like this is an area where there's a lot of mileage, basically. It's bringing along an essentially non-toxic substance and using it as a way of increasing the effectiveness and extending the use of a chemotherapy, in this case.
Well, yes, and it's still, you know, even though cisplatin has been around an awfully long time, it is still, my understanding, very widely used.
Indeed.
And I think, anything which could benefit the patient in that regard has got to be advantageous.
Absolutely.
But, you know, obviously I'm not in a position to be able to judge from a physician's viewpoint as to how successful it is. But certainly from a scientific one, it would appear as if it may be of benefit.
Well, that's very interesting indeed. Yeah, cisplatin is no holiday for anybody. It's extremely toxic, isn't it? And so, of course, the side effects are horrendous. So the ability to reduce the dose would be marvellous, far less damage from it, far less side effects. And certainly, of course, the other thing about this type of approach is usually its limited life, isn't it? It doesn't really go on that long before it stops working. So that could be very significant.
Well, no, I think that is true for most cytotoxic drugs, because regrettably, even though they will have a marked and profound effect on a short-term basis.
Yeah.
Very often they don't actually kill those cells which are responsible for promotion of metastatic disease, or they use what they call clonogenic cells. And therefore, yes, you're quite right, the usefulness of these drugs is somewhat limited.
So I haven't heard that term before, clonogenic. Does that mean exactly the same thing as cancer stem cell?
Well, I suppose there is, if you like, an association, but not actually quite the same thing. Mm-hmm. Clonogenic cells are those cells which, if you like, are the core of solid tumours. Most tumours are made up of, bulk of them are just normal cells, but those cells which are actually responsible for promoting disease are what we call clonogenic cells. And they are the ones which are extremely difficult to kill, and
yes,
are the ones which may well result in a return of the primary tumour.
Right. Okay, thank you. So, moving on, I believe John Carter always stressed that a clean, organic diet was an essential factor and people with cancer should embrace this alongside CV247. So was this because of some particular aspect of CV247 or just because it's a blooming good idea if you've got cancer?
Yeah, I think the latter. Knowing John as I did, he was, dare I say, fanatical about diet. That's the way he lived his life. He wouldn't touch anything which wasn't organic. He was a firm believer that if you're going to benefit maximally from CV247, you should enhance your chances of a successful treatment by sticking to a rigorous diet. And that means avoiding anything which was synthetic or highly processed.
Okay. And is this still being recommended, do you know?
I'm afraid I don't really know. I think that the ethos of that has been continued, but I can't say for sure that patients who are currently benefiting from CV27 actually rigorously adhere to a highly controlled diet. They may well do, but I just don't know.
Yeah, fair enough. Okay, so because of the, you've described the kind of different mechanisms of action of the ingredients, this means that in theory, it could apply to any kind of solid tumour, is that right?
Well, that also would be rather difficult to conclude absolutely. I think that certainly patients who've been in open label studies, there doesn't appear to be a clear indication of which ones benefit the most. Certainly, some who were in the open label studies, we got patients with breast cancer, with prostate cancer, mesothelioma, lymphoma, ovarian cancer, and thymomas, all of whom benefited. But they weren't necessarily the majority of patients. They were individuals. And I think it's very much an individual response. So whether it is entirely down to CV247 or the combination of other drugs that may well have been on at the same time, it's difficult to say.
It's very hard to tease these things out, isn't it?
It is extremely hard, especially in what they call open label studies.
You've used that term a few times. Would you just explain exactly what an open label study
well,
is?
Well, an open label study is basically one which is not controlled. So all you do is you give every patient in the study the active drug. And basically, the conclusions which are drawn on such things as quality of life. Have their quality of life improved, for example, when they're on this drug compared with their quality of life before they were on the drug? Are there any clinical symptoms which have improved? But it's very difficult if you don't have a control, either an active control or a placebo control, to draw any absolute conclusions from that. And in fact, you'll find that very few, if any, regulatory studies are ever uncontrolled.
Right.
Only if they're, if you like, being used to collect safety data.
Right. So they're really only being compared against themselves, so to speak. Not even against each other?
No, they're not. The ones which were undertaken as open label studies are just that. All the patients received CB247.
And so they're not even being compared with some kind of standard prognosis?
No, they're not. No, they're not. That's partly because I think John was of the opinion that there was nothing else. Most of the palliative treatments, if you like, are, I understand, quite well known, but he felt, and I think with some justification, that none tried to match the formulation that he had. Mm. So it was difficult to compare it with something which was, if you like, equally innocuous.
Right, fair enough. Okay, so nice to sort of do a bit of a roundup of the research that's gone into CB247, the studies that have happened, what the criteria were for them, and what was found.
Well, are you interested in the dog studies as well, or just those in man?
Well, let's have a little bit of dog and mostly human, shall we?
Well, there were two open label studies in dogs, which I think were in total about just over 100 animals over as long a period as 6 months. And certainly in those studies, it was very encouraging. As I mentioned to you, it was based largely on an observation of quality of life, and certain quality of life supposedly improved in over 70% of the dogs who were treated with CB247. For as long as 6 months.
Mm.
However, it didn't mean to say that disease didn't progress in some of those, because it did.
Mm-hmm.
So you got disease progression in some dogs, but combined with an improved quality of life. But I suspect that was something which is unique to animal studies. However, having said that, although disease did progress in some animals, it regressed in basically the same number and was stabilised, and again, in a similar number. But there was really no trend other than that. So, for example, the type of dog, how old they were, what sex they were, what particular type of cancer they had, didn't seem to matter.
Mm. Interesting, isn't it? So there's no real indications yet is what are the common features of the ones for which it works well?
No, there wasn't, unfortunately. It would be rather nice to be able to draw that conclusion from those studies, but part of the reason, I think, is because there's really insufficient numbers of dogs to be able to draw that conclusion from.
Mm.
I think you would have to be far more selective at the start of the study to be able to stand a chance of making that sort of prediction.
Right.
But certainly they were very encouraging results, and it certainly has encouraged a number of vets to use it, as I say, to this day.
Mm.
I have personally spoken to a number of owners of animals who found it hard to believe that there was such a reversal in the quality of their animal life, even if it was only for a few weeks or months.
Right, so definitely something for people to look at.
Well, I was going to say, before we actually started really studies in man, we obviously undertook some animal studies as well to see whether there were any models that we could base our observations on. Mm-hmm. And so we did a couple of studies, for example, in mice looking at thymoma in mice. Unfortunately, it didn't seem to have any benefit on thymoma, but there were no side effects either. We also looked at the effect in treating induced lung cancer in mice. There seemed to be some benefit, but without very obvious clinical signs. And that partly might have been because the type of carcinoma which was induced is a particularly aggressive type, which would be rather difficult to treat anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But then a number of in vitro studies were undertaken at a laboratory in northern Greece, and they looked at the effects of CB247 on a number of cancer cell lines. Mm-hmm. And there seemed to be some benefit, particularly with the fact that they measured a tumour suppressor protein called P53, and found that that was noticeably increased in cells, which was a very good thing.
Yes.
And it would, their conclusion was that it seemed to induce apoptosis, but not via the normal channels for inducing apoptosis, which is usually cytochrome C and caspase. But in both cases, they didn't seem to be affected, but as I say, P53 levels certainly were. So we were very encouraged by that. Began to look at some preliminary studies in man with a number of different malignant diseases. And a pilot study was undertaken, I think, in, it was 30-odd patients, and there were a number who had different types of cancer. Certainly prostate was included, but these were early stage prostate cancer patients. There was an ovarian cancer which was treated, colorectal, breast, and a number of miscellaneous ones. Some did respond quite well, particularly, as it happens, those with progressive early prostate cancer. They had stabilization of their prostate-specific antigen and improved quality of life. Mm. And it was that particular study which would encourage the one and only controlled study to be undertaken. And that was at Bedford Hospital. We recruited 110 patients who were randomized to receive either CB247 or sodium salicylate, because the feeling was that possibly the potentially most active ingredient of CB247 was sodium salicylate. Mm-hmm. So to compare the two was, I think, quite a good rationale for the study. But as I said a little while ago, the outcome was a little bit ambivalent. Both treatments seemed to work equally well. The only thing about the study which left a number of unanswered questions was the fact that a lot of the patients in the study had been extensively pre-treated with different types of anti-cancer drugs. And the indications were that patients who had not been pre-treated actually reacted better to CB247 than those who had been. But there were insufficient numbers of those to be able to make that absolute conclusion.
Sure.
So based on what we have, there would appear to be no difference between the two.
Okay, well, that's an interesting finding. But you did say they both did equally well. So does that mean that both the treatments actually did have an effect?
Yes. Of the 110 patients, there were approximately an equal number of patients who were randomized to sodium salicylate and to CB247, who undoubtedly were stabilized for as long as nearly up to 3 years. But as I say, most of those have not been pre-treated in any way. So that, I think, is like an observation which can't be ignored. There were about 20 of the 110 who were randomized to sodium salicylate were stabilized for over a year, and it was just under 20 on CV247 who were stabilised for a similar period.
So this was something that the people running the trial found unexpected?
Yeah, the majority of patients, there were over 40 of them, all of whom had been heavily pre-treated, were withdrawn from the study after only a few weeks.
Right. And, well, that's interesting. So what would be really interesting to see, of course, would be to actually be CV247 against placebo and just see how much effect it can be shown.
It would be. Obviously, that's up to the current owners of the formulation to decide whether or not the finances could be made available to do such a study. As you must appreciate, these are very expensive to perform.
Yes. Another thing I just wanted to nip back to, you talked about the Greek lab studies which showed that the gene was the anti-cancer gene was promoted, and apoptosis was promoted also, but by an unusual path. I just wanted if you'd speak a bit more about that for the sake of people who don't know necessarily what about apoptosis and what's actually being promoted there.
Well, apoptosis is what usually happens to normal cells. They will live for up to 15 life cycles and then they will be programmed to die. And that is the normal course of events. The problem with cancer cells is they lose that control and they are basically immortalized. Anything which one can re-trigger normal cell death, i.e. apoptosis, must be beneficial. That's probably a slightly oversimplistic way of putting it, because there are a very large number of factors involved. But at the end of the day, that is what you would like to achieve, so that you don't get this immortalisation of cancer.
Right, okay, yeah, thanks for making that clear. Okay, so can we go back to the story of CV247 again? After it moved on from John Carter, what happened after that?
Well, an effort was made to raise monies commercially to pay for some additional work. And one particular laboratory called Cambridge Laboratories, they actually did sponsor the study in prostate cancer. But because that was equivocal with regard to the results, no further investment was made actually in undertaking further controlled clinical work. And indeed, Cambridge Laboratories no longer exists anyway. It was sold out. The current owners, they bought the product as it was, with the data which we had available, and I think they have made efforts to raise additional funds, but I have to say I don't know how successful that has been. But certainly some work has been undergoing in Hungary. A professor of veterinary medicine there called Andor Sebastini, he's still actively involved, despite the fact he's actually quite an old man.
Right.
I'm very encouraged by what he's doing, but exactly how extensive that work is, I'm afraid I really don't know. You'd have to actually talk to one of the owners of the product, and they might be able to enlighten you.
Sure. So, Dr. Sebastini, he came to the product through the veterinary angle again.
He did, yes. He was very much involved in the early dog studies. In fact, extensively so. And he's remained an enthusiast ever since.
And you say there's quite a bit of initiative has gone on from Hungary, which is presumably his home country. Has this been mainly in the veterinary line, or is it to do with its application with humans?
It is actually licensed in Hungary for rather a peculiar indication. It's certainly not something which would be, I think, widely supported in the UK. I'm trying to actually think. Certainly in the UK, it's not licensed for use in humans. It's only available in the UK on what they call a named patient basis. But the there is a license in Hungary, and I'm trying to wrap my brains on actually what it's called. CB247 is registered in Hungary as a substance with therapeutic effect for dogs.
That's it.
So it is at the that is the correct statement.
Right. Okay. That's pretty broad, but only for dogs, of course. So that leads me on to. Well, for us in the UK here, the only way that somebody is going to come across CV247 in the UK is by a doctor prescribing it off-label. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay, so it's seen as a medicine, but it's not a licensed medicine.
Yes. It's because you are effectively making a claim for it, then in order to be able to use it as a claimed medicinal or a claimed medicinal benefit, it would have to be a licensed drug. The only thing you could suggest is that actually the components are largely those which you would regard as being health foods.
Right.
The only difference, of course, is sodium salicylate, which is not. Sodium salicylate is a drug. And therefore, the inclusion of that component, I'm afraid, means that it would actually have to be licensed or used purely at a doctor's discretion for, if you like, as a special or for named patients.
Okay, but that's not the case now. It's not licensed here at the moment. Okay, well...
No, it's not.
Well, I'd like to finish off by really just getting your opinion. I mean, obviously, you're very familiar with this product over the years. Well, first thing is, could you just say what your involvement with the product has been? Because you've obviously had a very long one.
Well, I'm largely involved from a project management viewpoint. For example, I set up and ran the study at Bedford General Hospital. So that was probably about my my major contribution to it. But from a sort of a general viewpoint, if you like, yes, I've been involved with it for a number of years, although that ceased 2 or 3 years ago. I haven't had a personal involvement with it since then. Obviously, I'm interested in what happens to the product. I mean, I talked earlier about raising monies to promote the development of this, and a number of individuals, including myself, yes, did make private investments into the company. So clearly I do have an interest, but from a monetary viewpoint, that's almost irrelevant. I'm rather more interested in seeing whether or not there can be any proven benefits to patients, whether it's purely as a palliative medicine, or whether we can establish that it may be a particular benefit for certain patients with certain types of cancer, or as we expanded a little bit earlier on, whether or not it can be further developed as an adjunct to cisplatin, or indeed any other toxic drug to that matter, but cisplatin is the only one it has been examined with.
Yes,
and I think the potential for that is actually quite exciting.
I agree,
but as you know, as yet it has not been taken up by anybody, to my knowledge. But as I say, you have to talk to the current owners of the product to see how far they've got with that.
And do you just want to say a little bit about your background personally? You talk about this in quite a scientific manner. You're obviously more than a sort of business involvement here. What's your particular background?
Yes, well, I have a doctorate in biochemistry. I've been in the drug development field for well over 40 years in a variety of different therapeutic areas, and this was just one of them. So, like a lot of people of my era, I've become a jack of all trades. There are not many areas of drug development that I've not had some involvement with at some time. But I suppose that I was going to suggest that I might have slightly more knowledge in particular areas. I suppose it would be in early phase clinical development.
Right. And given your biochemical background and the fact you've been prepared to put in some of your own money behind CB247, I take it you feel that this is actually something which definitely does have some potential for someone.
I do, yes, I do. I think that the evidence, unfortunately, a lot of which is anecdotal, did suggest that a number of patients benefited from that in a way which was not immediately obvious. In other words, you couldn't put it down to something else. There's a strong suggestion that CB247 does have a benefit. I think the problem is identifying who is actually going to benefit. I think a lot of work would have to be done to establish that. But I do think that some patients have undoubtedly benefited from it.
So you would say it deserves more attention than it's had?
I think so, yes. I think particularly in light of this observation we made with cisplatin, I think that is something which is certainly worthy of further investigation, yes.
Okay, well, look, we're going to finish there. It's been very interesting, Roger. Thank you very much indeed. It's great to have all your background to talk about in such an expert way. And this is, you've obviously got much more experience of it than most people. So very interesting. Thank you.
Not at all. Nice talking to you.
It's extraordinary how long something with potential can linger on the sidelines of medicine. I've seen many people for whom the type of benefits outlined by Roger seem to apply. Hopefully, sometime soon, CV247 will get the extra push it needs to find out what it can really do. Thanks very much for listening. I do hope you'll be able to join me again next week for another Yes to Life show. Goodbye.